Hello, David.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. Great. Okay. It's the 10th of November, 2014. I'm Paul Scott. I'm speaking to David Streda. And we thought we'd have a quick chat tonight, a recap on the event which David organised in Derby called Mello 2014, which was the first event of its type organised by David. And literally, you designed your own investor show from the ground up, David, didn't you?
Yeah, that's pretty much spot on, Paul.
So do you want to, what was your motivation or your inspiration, if you like, to create your own investor show?
Well, I guess really, Paul, it's the fact that I've been to so many investor events in London, in the main, where they're cobbled, probably not the right word, but they're put together by events companies in the main, and they create what they want. And I don't know whether they think investors are going to really want what they're creating, but they know they can make a lot of money from them by effectively providing a stage for lots of resources and mining companies and biotech companies that may or may not ever go into profit with a drug that they discover or create. And, you know, one way or another, they're very hit-and-miss type company situations that more often than not, I think it's the directors that tend to get the best of, and we just keep having to supply the funds for them. And, you know, having 90% of those in a room is just not really good for long-term investors, I don't think.
And also they tend to, so quality of the companies presenting is a big issue, isn't it? And
well, that's also, definitely.
And also you get all these sort of trading systems type
bands,
don't you?
And
get rich quick schemes.
They want to pay a lot of money to be in front of lots of investors as well. So, you know,
how was your approach different then?
Well, my view was that there has to be another way of doing it. And the reason it's done that way is clearly because they pay a very, very handsome high price to be in front of us, and the investors are sucked in because it's totally free of charge, and people think, you know, it's free of charge, what does it matter, I'll just trek on in there and see what's on offer. And so you end up with 1,000 people in a room all wandering around, you know, pretty much deciding I'll stay for a couple of hours because there isn't much here. Or the ones that do get sucked in, of course, even if there's something good to listen to, very often, you know, you won't even get a chance to sit down and listen to that one because there's so many people chasing the same chair.
I mean, you do sometimes get some good headline speakers, though, don't you?
You're right. And some of those events do have more than one, and you would want to sit down and listen to those talks. But you're not being you're not there to just listen to somebody else say how they made money over the last 10 years. You really want to try and find some new company that's very good and make your real journey worthwhile. The thing I wanted to try and do was to turn it on its head and actually have a more balanced situation where serious investors had a chance to have everything they wanted and have companies that were a lot more carefully selected on the basis of what they've done and how good the management were and that they were making profits and paying dividends and had good products. And, you know, invite them along as opposed to say, hey, if you pay me X amount of money, you're guaranteed to be able to come. And to balance that, to actually charge investors, you know, a reasonable amount of money to come along to an event which would benefit them, and they'd feel it was worthy of paying an entrance fee for.
I mean, I paid $500, well, I didn't actually, I got a press pass, but for another investor event, the ticket price was £595 for one day, plus VAT, I think, and that was the London Value Investor Conference. But, I mean, your entry fee was nothing like that, was it?
No, it was nothing like that.
So what was the fee
For the whole of the 3 days, the absolute maximum price that somebody would have paid is £79. Many of those who attend Mello events regularly got in for half that price. And to just attend on the Saturday, many would have been able to buy a ticket just for £10.
So we're really talking very low interest charge. I mean, my rail fare cost me £95. So, you know, in that context, but it does seem to have, just charging a small amount, I think, very much kept the numbers to a level where you got good access to management, and the
exactly.
people who were there were all serious investors. Not necessarily big investors. A lot were, well, wealthy people, but there were a lot of sort of keen investors, I should say.
Yeah, serious about what they're doing, really. I think the emphasis is more on serious about what they're investing.
And I mean, I know Richard Walensky, the FD of Aviation, who I knew from when he came down to my Brighton investor event, and you actually put me in touch with him originally, funny enough, at an investor show. I was chatting to him at Derby Mellow, and he said, you know, the level of investor engagement was fantastic, that he'd done a 30-minute presentation in a side room, and then quite a few people sort of literally followed him out the room and came to his stand and carried on chatting with him. And he just
I actually, I mean, you know, many of the directors, because they couldn't stay on in the company room, of course, because the next company presentation would have been starting. But
generally came
from where they were presenting and said, I'll talk to people and answer more questions on my stand. And that's what he did.
Exactly.
So,
I think it worked very well because, I mean, I was, you had to get your various little helpers, of which I was one.
My army of helpers.
Yeah, your army of helpers. We were given 2-hour blocks to chair meetings in each room, and they were half an hour in duration. And I found invariably most speakers tend to overrun, so I was fairly strict with mine, and I just gave them a 10-minute warning and a 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
If they still didn't stop, I just stood up and started clapping and thanked them. So I kept my room rigidly to time, and I was very pleased with that. But I literally just got up and said, well, that's very good. Any further questions, just go with Mr. So-and-so. Literally, go outside, have a coffee with him, have a beer with him tonight. Actually, talking about that, I've got to tell you one funny story. I was in the bar one evening, and I was chatting to one of the company CEOs that I knew who'd presented during that day. And he said to me, oh, hello, Paul. And we were chatting away. I won't embarrass him by saying the name of the company or the director. And his eyes just started to sort of glaze over, and I thought, I must be really boring him. And he just said to me, sorry, Paul. He said, I haven't heard anything that you've said. And I looked at where he was looking at, and there was a particularly attractive young lady with an extremely short skirt on, about 10 feet behind. And the moment someone moved and he got sight of her, he just switched off and then stopped listening to everything I was saying. So
it wasn't one of our army of helpers, I can tell you that. They were on very strict dress code. I'm not sure how you can compete with that, Paul, but there you go.
Well, I know. He said to me, basically, he said, sorry, I just hear this buzzing noise in my ear. What is it? Oh, it's Paul talking. So that was, but again, I think that you have a relatively small number of people there, probably 200-300 or something, was it?
It depended on the day. Friday was actually a very, very well attended day, so there were about 300,
600
there on Friday.
Oh, 400, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even at that level, you get such brilliant access to the director. So the layout, it was at the Derby Conference Centre. So to describe it, really, it had a sort of oval shaped central area, which wasn't that big, but it had enough room for perhaps 10 or 15 company stands, 20 company stands.
Yeah,
it was
22.
Yes, a standard sort of exhibition stand type things arranged in the oval shape, and then. Around the side of that oval, on the outer perimeter of it, was a walkway, and then with restaurants and bars off there, and three lecture rooms, weren't they, that all seated about 100, 150 people.
That's
and you had events going on simultaneously in all three rooms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we look at the Thursday, and a lot of people were residential for the 3 days as well, weren't they?
Out of all the people that were there, 218 were literally there all 3 days.
Yeah, so we had great networking opportunities in the evening as well, and it was a very social show as well, wasn't it?
And about eight of the companies were there all 3 days as well, because originally we had the idea that companies would want to be with us for all the way through. Mm.
But then you varied it, didn't you? I did.
I decided this is crazy because if we're all there, 218 people all 3 days, you'll get bored seeing the same companies after a while. So
each day the stands changed, didn't they?
Changed completely, new
people came in. Yeah, it was very, very good. It was more than good. I mean, for a first-time event, it was absolutely amazing. I don't know how you arranged all of this from a standing start. Everybody loved it. It was a fantastic event. So if we run through the sort of have a quick debrief on the 3 days, and then after that maybe move on to look at the future, what the future holds, and what you're planning on doing for next year.
Yeah.
So on the Thursday, we had, there were 11 companies, I think, presenting at various, who each had a 30-minute slot throughout the day. We'll cover the individual companies on another audio cast later, because I think you and I didn't generally get to see that many of the company presentations because you were so busy organising everything.
I know you saw probably about 7 or 8 of them overall because you were chairing those.
That's right.
The problem I had, to be honest, all the way through, when you're trying to link up with everyone and organising the whole thing, you tend to float from here to there and everywhere. And I think I caught sort of 5 minutes of the odd company one and 20 minutes of some of the keynote speeches. But other than that, I had to be elsewhere sorting out a problem or something that needed extra attention.
Yeah. I think what was particularly good about it, you had some really quite big name, well, very big name fund managers there giving talks.
We had some incredible names there.
So, I mean, on the first day, just looking at the list here, you had Judith McKenzie of Downing, LLP, Small Cap Fund. You had Chris Boxall from Fundamental Asset Management, of course, is my boss in the research side of it. I look after for one of their funds.
Yeah.
He's an inheritance tax specialist for AIM Shares. Then you had Paul Jordan of Amati. Now, of the company presentations on the main stage, the one that I heard a lot of feedback for, I missed it because I didn't arrive till Thursday quite late afternoon, was the CEO of AOWorld.com. Which is quite a big company, isn't it? It's a very high market cap, isn't it? Very highly rated internet stock. And as soon as I arrived at Derby, people said to me, "Oh, Paul, you didn't miss AOL.com, did you? Absolutely amazing presentation. What a charismatic, brilliant guy the presenter was." But I said, So what valuation are the shares on then? Are they attractively valued? And they went, "Oh, don't know about that. It's just a brilliant presentation."
I don't know how much he covered in his talk, but of course his headline title for the talk was AO.com Bargain or Bonkers. So he was
brave of him.
He's opening himself up there for questioning, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, everybody, you know, he was very inspirational because of the beginnings and how he got to where he is. And I think, you know, it was an exceptionally popular talk. And he was a very good example of one of those who, when he came out, you know, he had a big following of people who wanted to further discuss. And I know he was downstairs in the relaxation area in the middle of all the company stands, chatting to about 6 or 7 people afterwards for a good hour.
Mm.
So,
oh, really?
You know, people had really good amount of time with John.
He's a really nice guy.
Yeah,
I mean, looking at the valuation of it, it's valued at, well, yesterday it was valued at £810 million, and it's up 7.5% this morning. So what's that, probably about up to about 850-odd million market cap.
Yeah.
Forward PE is over 60. And from, I mean, I don't get it with this one, I must say. I mean, it's a distributor of white goods, so very, very low margin. They seem to make no money, really, the money seems to come from selling extended warranties and a sort of superior service offering, but it's really not forecast to make very much money at all.
Yeah.
So I just can't understand how it's worth $800 million at this stage, but...
People seem to feel that they had... something good going forward. I think they're moving into Germany and they're doing things elsewhere. So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm neutral, but I didn't hear it all the way through, unfortunately. I caught literally 10 minutes of that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think probably somebody who attended it and could tell us the whole story would be very useful so that we can...
Yeah, I need to track down some people who were at the presentation.
I will say about John, he's very open and answered all the questions I heard afterwards. So I do know that he'd love to show people around his very, very modern distribution centre and show how all that works. So, you know, he's certainly wanting to engage with private investors.
Yeah. Okay. So
it was a big institutional raise when it went to market.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for there to have been some sellers, which there have to have been because it had dropped to at least half the value of where it listed. So it must have been the institutions that have been selling out. So maybe he feels it's a different market. He now needs to draw interest.
Stimulate
from
some private investor interest,
yeah.
I mean, I always think you need both for a healthy market.
You need
some institutions in there with solid long-term holdings and can dump up money quickly in placings. But you need a good thriving private shareholder base to create the liquidity and narrow the spread and all that.
Yeah, and effectively set the price sometimes in the
Set the price, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the smaller trades that set the price, yeah.
It is.
Now, the other thing with Mello Derby was that you had these panel discussions, which were very, very popular, weren't they?
Incredibly popular, Paul, incredibly. In fact,
yeah.
you sat in on probably two or three of them, I think.
I know,
as
brilliant.
I think people were sick of
hearing me by the end of it.
No, they're not. They're not. They really enjoyed you. In fact, that's why we had the extra bonus session with you on it at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, I'll come on to that, but that's on the next day.
Just
on Thursday, you had two. One was called Fatal Attraction, and one was called Make Way for Noddy.
So
I know Make Way for Noddy was a panel discussion about non-execs, wasn't it?
It was.
And what was the other one, Fatal Attraction?
Fatal Attraction was the sexy story stocks that people have to be wary of, and whether there's something that can be done to keep you a little bit safer in, you know, whether you invest in something that has a big story attached to it or whether you stay clear from them. But
Okay. Then moving on to Friday the 7th of November, it was my good self who opened the day. That was certainly a stressful morning because, I don't know why I agreed to this, but you talked me into doing a small cap value report live. So I had to get up at 7 a.m. with a thumping hangover because people kept buying me pints of Beck's Fear the night before.
Shocking.
Drank several cups of coffee and a pint of water and had to sit down and read all the RNSs and actually write a small cap value report on Stockopedia as usual in my hotel bedroom. Then make notes and then come downstairs and give a presentation in the lecture theatre at 10:30, but the good icebreaker was that instead of introducing myself as a small cap blogger, I introduced myself, well, various people heard different things, but I think it was small cop blagger was one version, small clock something was another one, and I won't repeat the other one that I think made people thought they heard the most.
I just like small cups, Paul.
Small cups, yeah. Well, anyway, it was a good icebreaker. So I launched into briefing everyone on the morning's RNSs on Friday, which I think were Puricore moving from the main market to AIM. So I commented on that. Prime People Interim Results, a small recruitment company, which looks quite good value. And then I probably shouldn't have done this, but I commented on Rightster, which was a company that was actually going to be giving a talk, I think, the next day or later that day. And I was rather negative about their figures. And I think it might have sort of damaged the number of people who went to their presentation. So I think probably, but apparently only 18 people went. And somebody said, oh, Paul Scott had said it was terrible in the morning or something.
Oh, no.
I mean, the trouble was, I'm just looking at the numbers. I'm not making judgment on business models. You know, that's the job of investors to look at that. I just flagged that it was heavily loss-making and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I think next year, if I'm doing anything like that, I won't comment on any companies that are actually there at the thing, you know, because you don't want to sort of undermine people. Sort of shoot a hole in their bow before they've even got up and started talking.
Wait,
so.
You're probably welcome to comment afterwards.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Especially if you've seen the actual presentation, I guess. But I didn't go in on that one. But the only thing I will say, and I know it's going to come up later as well, but you know, so many inquiries have come in over the last few days, and especially today, on when the release of all the downloads will be for all the films that we've watched.
Yes, because you had film crew in filming pretty much
all three rooms we've had film crews in.
So you're going to put those on a DVD and sell those? Does that mean
I just don't know how best to do it. I want to get, I mean, the content is so valuable in that, you know, all the keynotes have been filmed, many of the company ones and all the panel sessions. So, you know, we're in a position where somehow I want to deliver that up to people. But those who effectively, of course, paid for tickets, I'm very happy to let them have them at a price that reflects the price they've already paid for the tickets. I wouldn't pay the price. But the thing is that there are a lot of people who clearly didn't go to Derby, and I feel they should have to pay something for the content.
Yeah, I agree.
And
because
it
costs you money to have film crew in there to film it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Why should people get things free anyway?
And, yeah. And you'll probably find that our man at Rights, the Charlie Muirhead, probably has the exact solution for that, because that's exactly what they do. So he might be the man, you know, delivering that in the end. So
we'll see if we can get a...
Not knocking too much.
No, well, I got to say, I'm quite happy to issue a grovelling apology if it will help you help you get a good deal there. So and now also, I do want to mention that I gave the Small Cap Rally report was only about 15 minutes because there weren't many trading statements that day. So I followed that on with a brief spiel about my sort of journey as an investor from sort of my roller coaster ride, making a tremendous amount of money initially, and then things going disastrously wrong in 2007-08 for me, you know, because I combined gearing with illiquidity, and it was an absolute disaster. And I think people really like the sort of openness about not just talking about successes, but talking about failures as well.
Yeah.
I think that went down well. And ultimately, the positive thing that you can dust yourself down, get up, and rebuild from disasters in life. You know,
that's exactly it, Paul, and that's what you've done. And you're pretty much a model for how you can you know go from you know hero to zero and back up to hero again. So
So and then finally, I decided, because I've been silenced on Quindel, where I have short positions, I'm not allowed to print anything on Stockopedia about anything where I have a short position, but I have very, very strong views on Stockopedia. I've been bearish on it, on Quindel. Sorry, guys. No, I've been very bearish on Quindel since 2012, in fact, 5 months before Tom Moonafith got on the case, although Tom's been done some brilliant work, I think, over the last few months in particular.
Yeah.
And he scored, and I made it quite clear to the audience on Friday at Mellow Derby that I thought Quindel was a disaster, and that it was a huge accident waiting to happen, and that I thought Tom's allegations about the direct purchases actually being direct to sales were correct, that I'd researched it. Well, I didn't expect, and that I gave the strongest possible warning about that company to everyone there, and made it clear that it was one to be very much avoided. Well, anyway, I got the shock of my life this morning, the next trading day, when an RNS comes out confirming effectively that Tom Winifred was correct, and the company
is quite shocking,
had to issue itself. It's a disaster for Quindel. I think it's game over, really. The management got no credibility whatsoever now. They've deceived the market, I think, with false announcements several times now. I think it's on its way out, that one. I really do. Then we had Andy Brough of Schroders. That got a very good feedback, I think, from his talk for an hour.
Yeah, very good feedback.
And then he was followed by Gervais Williams from Meissen Group, another big name fund manager. So you've really got some, how did you get these big name speakers up?
And not only that, then followed by Giles Hargreaves. I mean, gosh,
Giles Hargreaves,
three of the biggest names in smaller companies.
And of course, four, because you had Lord John Lee as well.
In
succession. So that was an absolutely spectacular running.
All I can say on that really is that I'm really fortunate that I do, you know, from time to time talk to these guys. They know that I'm serious about what I do. And, you know, when I said I'm putting together this fantastic event,
they all backed you.
They all backed me. And, you know, to a man, they've all come back to me as well over the last 2 or 3 days and said, what a job you did. So I'm really pleased with that. They could easily have said, I'll bother doing that again.
And then you had Katie Potts as well, this presentation. I heard that a lot of people after her talk saying how thought-provoking it was. Her main theme seemed to be that the structural problem in the UK of, for various reasons, pension funds are just not putting money into small caps and growth companies, and which are being starved of capital, and entrepreneurs who can't push ahead. Instead, they're just pouring money into gilts.
Exactly. One of those laws of unintended consequences. Gosh, that's even
right.
Do what me get out
now. Catching my disease and not being able to speak properly. Now, the three companies I did chair in one of the smaller side rooms were Paragon Entertainment, which is a 4 million microcap thing, Software Radio Technology. Now, I met Simon Tucker there, very charismatic guy, the CEO there.
Yeah.
I'd been quite rude about his company before when they've missed profits targets in the past, a number of times, I think. So when I introduced myself as Paul Scott, he went, "Ah, you're Paul Scott." So I just said to him, are you going to hit me? And he just said, "No." He said, maybe not. And we got on like out of a very, very charismatic, very personable guy. You know, he talks a great story about the things in the pipeline, very upbeat. But the trouble is, somebody who knows the company well said it was pretty much identical to a presentation they had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the trouble is, the company can't control the placing of these lumpy, very large orders from governments, which Simon admitted. He was very open about that. I don't know. I'm close to maybe buying a few shares in that, but
it's one of those things that you really want to be successful, because actually, I'll give Simon his due. He has done everything possible to be as open with all shareholders of all categories as he can. He does excellent webcasts of any, you know, the AGM webcasts.
Yeah, he does.
He does everything possible, so you tend to feel that you want the company to do well and do exactly as he sort of more or less outlined that he's doing. But
yes. I think I'd want a little bit. I'd want a little bit more of a discount for the risk.
Yeah.
I think 30 million market cap's too much. If it was sort of 15, 20 million, I'd probably have a nibble. But it may not get to that level. And it sounds like they've got interesting stuff in the pipeline over the next few months.
Yeah.
Now Snoozebox.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Obviously, terrible history, loss making. The original business plan didn't work. We know all that. But the version 2 snooze boxes are being launched imminently, and they actually brought one along Mellow Derby and had it parked off the side of the off their own room.
Yeah, that was a clever move. Yeah, they had it parked
was.
On the side of the building with double open doors that went out to it.
Yeah. And a mock-up of one of their hotel foyer things in the actual room.
Yeah.
Now, I must say, I was tremendously impressed. This version 2 thing... The original version ones were just converted shipping containers that had to be sort of put in place with a crane, and it took up to a week to set it all up. The version 2s are completely different. It's a bespoke trailer which has all the wheels built in, all the walkways and guttering and roofing and everything all slides out hydraulically. It's got its own self-leveling hydraulic rams for each unit. And all they do is sort of reverse a tract unit into it as if it was a sort of articulated lorry, drive it to where it's going, and unhitch the tractor unit and press a few buttons to level it up, and it's there, it's operational.
Yeah,
so I said to the guys, "Well, can you set this up within a day?" And he laughed, and he said it took us 1 hour to set up.
I know, it's amazing.
I said, 1 hour? So that totally changes the dynamics of it.
Yeah, because in the past it was costing so much to get it from A to B and effectively build it out. It was too
much. Now they can do a 3-day event every week. So, whereas previously a 3-day event would probably take up 3 weeks. So they can do 3 times as much work. They've got 6 rooms in each compartment. The rooms are tiny, but they're really, really nicely designed.
Yeah.
Very impressive. Although, I don't know, we'll have to see if they can make it work. But it really is, it's a total redesign of the business model, in my view.
It's not just
a refresh.
We had privileged access to it because it doesn't officially launch for another 2 weeks yet, so we haven't really got a chance to see it.
That's right.
And the other interesting thing, when I was in the bar, and one thing to be clear about the conference centre and Derby, it was ever so relaxed and friendly in the evening.
Yeah.
We could all be chatting away in the bar that was literally, you know, just only a few yards away from where everybody had been located during the day.
Yeah.
Very
easy, great,
and formal access. I was chatting in the bar, and somebody actually said to me, "Do you know, I've tried today to see if I can put in a request to have those snooze boxes at my daughter's wedding, because she's getting married in a remote location for some reason."
Yeah.
And he said we could do with about 20 of those rooms, literally delivered to us for the day. And he said I'd be happy to pay the amount they want, just get everybody housed. So
yeah.
You never know, they might have done a bit of business there as well. Who knows?
Yeah. And then when we had a poker tournament on Friday evening,
yeah.
And a live band as well. So it was a really, really nice thing.
Yeah, the band was, I mean, everybody loved the band. It's just a shame that obviously we were all in there playing poker in one
playing
room
poker,
and they were
yeah.
playing in the other. But
well, at least the people who had to do the walk of shame from the poker tournament sort of
yes, they can one by one go out and listen to the band.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Cantering on, because we're nearly out of time. The Saturday, then the last day, more of the same, really. More excellent fund managers. More panel shows. Oh, we did the Hard to Say Goodbye panel discussion
yes,
on Friday.
Yes.
I think a lot of people said they thought was the best one. That was where we had Giles Hargreave and John Lee, and I only found out 2 hours beforehand that I was meant to be chairing it. So. and then you came in sort of a third of the way through and joined the panel.
Oh,
panel.
It wasn't that far through.
No, you're right, it wasn't. No,
5 minutes in, I think.
Yeah. yes. But also I've seen...
And I'll tell you what, Paul, I'll tell you how popular it was. Do you know, I came in because I had to sort something out before I got there, and I knew that you'd be coping with those three heavyweights there with you. So
yeah.
I went in. I couldn't even get a chair, not even at the front.
No, I know. You
had
to
sit on a table to join the panel. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I
introduced them, just gave the microphone to Lord Lee, and off he went, and just this... You know, eloquent sort of speech, just off the cuff, with no notes. He's just full of insight. It was just brilliant.
Yeah.
And anyway, I've done a write-up of it on Stockopedia because
okay.
I thought this is so good. I'm gonna make some notes. So I was chairing it whilst taking notes. So if you look on Stockopedia, it's on the discussion section there. There's an article called Mellow 2014 Panel Discussion. It's Hard to Say Goodbye. And 2,200 people have already read that, so
wow.
That was good.
Hey,
so
one thing I will say about Stockopedia as well, Paul,
yes.
Even though they couldn't attend, because, of course, they've been pre-booked for another event in London, they very, very kindly, at their cost, provided detailed one-page sheets on every single one of the companies that attended.
That's right. So it was a compendium, wasn't it?
It was, and you know, lots said how brilliant that was, because as they're going around the companies, of course, they could get all the facts.
Right. Had all the information to hand, yeah. No, they did a great job on that. So thanks to the guys at Stockopedia. I think that's covered most of it, David, hasn't it? Shall we touch on sort of the future then? What are you going to do another one next year? And if so, tell us about it.
I mean, I think it's going to be impossible for us not to do another one, unfortunately. Paul, I don't say unfortunately. I mean, it's fantastic. Everybody's loved what they've had. But,
yes.
You know, I need to sit down with all the feedback forms. And by the way, they're going out almost as we speak, really. We're going to send out... email every delegate to see what they liked and what they didn't like, and if there's anything they feel we could improve. We'll then obviously take a real hard look at it and decide how we move forward for next year. My honest feel at the moment is it'd be nice to have a summer one, because, you know, I'm not saying the weather was bad. I don't think I left the Derby Conference Centre for 1 minute in 3 days. So
no, I didn't. No, I just stayed there.
I don't know what the weather was like outside, but
and
I know some people said that they struggled because there was a road bridge that was being rebuilt. So I think traffic was quite bad out there. But I mean, it would be lovely to have a marquee in the summer and be able to have a bit more open space. Whether it be in Derby, which can cope with a marquee, of course, or whether it be in a place, you know, closer to London. And I don't know.
Yes.
It's too early to say, but one thing is for sure, everybody loved the residential aspect of it. You know,
I agree.
They love meeting everybody in the evenings and chatting about what had gone on during the day. So, you know, it may well be 3 days again. It may be closer to London. It might not. If we can fit everybody into Derby again, I'm sure we'll try and do it if it works for everyone.
Okay, brilliant. I mean, I suspect, given that it's been such a roaring success this year, I suspect a lot more people will want to come next year.
Oh, yeah.
So I think you might need to find a substantially bigger venue. But
Although it coped quite adequately for what we had. You know, the decision to go there was based on two things, really. Number one was I'd seen the site. I could see that it would work well for a set number of people. And, you know, I didn't have to risk too much outlay initially to make sure that I could get the whole thing running. Even if only 150 or 200 people had bought tickets, you know, I wouldn't be stressed too much to cover the cost of the whole event. Where if I'd gone for a London venue, and then, you know, the markets were actually horrible in October, the first 2 weeks of October.
That's true. That didn't help, did it?
You know, I mean, ticket sales were fantastic for the first 2 or 3 weeks. Then it just collapsed off when the markets collapsed. Mm, it showed, shows you the psychology of investors. You know, they
Definitely. Everyone hunkers down. Sentiment can change on a dime in less than a week.
Exactly. I was selling only 2 or 3 tickets a day for about 2 or 3 weeks solid. So I was getting really worried then, thinking, you know, am I going to be embarrassed that the companies only have a few people to talk to? And, you know, am I going to end up with all those keynote speakers coming from London and thinking, why on earth did we come to this place in Derby? You know, I mean, you know, they all did me the favour of coming all the way to Derby. So, you know, I was always balancing everything off, really, and, you know.
But it worked a treat, because all the keynote speakers got a packed-out lecture theatre,
didn't they? Packed out.
Yeah, excellent. Good. Anything else you want to cover, Dave? Otherwise, we'll
clearly, you know, it's the end of the show, and what a journey it was. But, you know, I've got to really mention the whole team and everyone that helped. And, you know, I don't want to do an Oscar speech, but I mean, all the way from you guys, you know, my sort of closest investing buddies. You know, I asked each of them if they would help just by covering 2 or 3 of the individual company presentations, so that we had somebody chairing them, making sure they were on time, finishing and starting clearly, and keeping everything running with presentations, all the downloads of all the slides. You know, everything was. You know, I have to, you know, it was almost precision stuff. Everybody worked absolutely beautifully together, and of course most of
it ran so smoothly, didn't it?
Unbelievable.
There were just no, you would never have known that was a first year event. It just sound equipment all worked, all the presentations were downloaded onto the laptop hard drives in advance of all it just ran so super smoothly, didn't
it? You know, and a lot of that was obviously also down to all the helpers, all the volunteers that I had that came up to Derby, and literally, and friends and family is the best way to explain it. You know, it was nearly all relatives and people who I play tennis with effectively in
there was just huge buy-in from your network of friends and family, like you say, wasn't there?
Yeah, and they all had roles, making sure that when people arrived, they knew that what was happening in the program, where they were up to, and you know, just guaranteeing every presenter got to his slot when he, you know, because it'd be no use if the team are working very well inside the company room and then the presenter's somewhere else chatting with somebody in the bar. So.
Yeah.
Probably with you, Paul. And so, you know, it all went really well. And one person was at the head of that, and it wasn't me. It was Georgina who
did a brilliant job,
absolutely brilliant team. And, you know, well done to Georgina. And I've spoken with her today. Now she's had a good day to get over it. And she's actually roaring to go, ready for the next one. So,
brilliant.
So I guess, you know, it's probably likely to happen. So everyone stay tuned, and we'll let you know when the videos are available and when you can download them. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Excellent.
Fingers crossed.
Wonderful. Well done again, David. It was an absolute triumph, and I'm really looking forward to next year's.
And to leave it on one note, that does involve you as well, Paul. It's important to mention, actually two things. One was your brother did a fantastic job on making sure that all the sound and visuals were all keyed together and everything went smoothly as well. But the other one, which I think is just shows how good it is to get away from computers and network and really make new friends and get to know each other. I had one guy who came up to me asking who you were exactly and where you were, and it was somebody I think who had an argument online with you about.
Oh yes, that was hilarious. Yes.
Incredible. I pointed you out, and he came up obviously to talk to you. You were best of friends by the end of the show.
Yeah, so. He was a bit wary of me at first, and he said, you and I had a terrible spat on ADVSN bulletin boards. Don't worry about that. I said, that happens all the time. I couldn't even remember it, but apparently, he said, it was actually a case of me being more rude to you than you being rude to me. I said, which stock was it, Quindel or Globo? And he said, Globo. So that was that.
But I mean, how
often the way I think when you actually meet people in real life, they're charming.
Exactly. You know, and I think people do things online without meeting people that they really wouldn't do in real life.
I know. I'm really going to make an effort myself now to try and be sort of always polite to people on bulletin boards. I don't know how long this will last, but you're right.
Not too bad, Paul. You're one of the better ones overall. It's just that you get involved in so many, obviously, you know, companies that are probably a little bit sailing close to the wind, so you're going to be ending
up.
Yeah,
and when you challenge the bulls and give a bearish view, they don't want to hear it. They just want to chase you away.
Yeah.
That's the trouble. And, but no, it was very nice to meet him, and, okay, well, on that note of reconciliation and peace, I think we'll round off. Thanks for your time, David.
Yeah, no, well done, Paul, and it was great to have you there for the 3 days, and everyone else who went.
Thank you.
Hopefully everybody will be there next year, and all those who missed it will definitely want to be there, because it's been such a good show.
Yeah.
Great. Take care, Paul.
Excellent, Dave. Cheers, then.
Bye.
Bye.